From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. As Washington continues to reel under allegations of dissension and disunity within the White House, a potential confrontation between the U.S. and Russian militaries may be on the horizon in Syria. For more on that, we spoke with Mark Sloboda, international affairs analyst at Moscow State University. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Friday. Well, Mark, we've had all this craziness in Washington, just continuing, of course, the backdrop of Russiagate and the book from Robert Woodward, who, you know, I brought down one president 40 years ago, watch me do it again, his new book, Fear, and then that being disavowed by the White House, and then almost to prove it, an anonymous editorial in the New York Times, and some pushback from that. All kinds of craziness framing what we heard on Thursday, a rumor, which we can only imagine if it's true or not, that Trump intends to reverse his position again on Syria and leave some soldiers in there permanently. You know, there's a permanent U.S. presence in Syria. And then some pushback from Russia essentially saying, look, we're going in there to clean that stuff out. We know you got guys in there. You know you got guys in there. Get them out or it's going to be messy. That's all the framework for what's about to happen in Syria.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost at a loss to say whether things are crazier in Washington, in the White House right now, or in Syria, but it seems to be crazy in both places. This book of Woodward's, I just have to, I've already, we've seen it for the last few years, if you're, familiar with the work that Bob Woodward has done recently. But, you really have to ask what has happened to Bob Woodward, and when did he become such a partisan figure and such a apologist, for the deep state, as it were. There is a number of quotes from Woodward's book, Fear, that feature supposedly prominent figures in the administration, and these are named quotes, having said things that are insulting to the president. Supposedly Mattis saying that he acts and has the understanding of a 5 to 6 year old. Similar quotes from Coates and Kelly and so on, all senior security related officials in the Trump administration. Now, none of these things are things that you or I haven't said about Trump.
Right. From what we see through the prism of the media,
Yeah. Yeah, no, well, I mean, I don't think I have to say through the prism of the media. I'd have to say I honestly believe those things. I don't disagree with them at all. The thing is that these supposed quotes all come via second or third hand sources.
Right.
Someone said that someone said that Mattis said.
Right.
And Woodward did not go to the figures to confirm these sources and say, did you say that?
Which is what a journalist does.
That is journalism, right? That is actual journalism.
You go back to looking at one of the, heroicized, versions of Woodward and Bernstein in Watergate, All the President's Men, that kind of stuff. You see the actual battle, the fictionalized version of the actual battle between these guys, Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman, wanting to say things, about what this one said and that one said, because, Deep Throat was their anonymous source. The editor going bananas, you need two or three people on the record confirmations before I let you print that. And this is an entirely different standard now.
It's an entirely different standard. And why? Because it seats a political agenda.
Right.
Is it news that someone said these within the administration? we all have these opinions of Trump, and right. I personally don't have any doubt that Mattis and Coates and Kelly have some unpositive things, and that regularly people working not just with Trump but with any president have right. occasionally said negative things about them. Right,
that's because, right.
But,
think about the last few presidents, for example. You can imagine what it'd be like working for Obama as a serious foreign policy person, or for Bush just as a sane person, or for Clinton as somebody that knows how to keep their pants on.
Every one of the named sources in these books, at least the ones that I've just mentioned, and then I know there are others, have denied that they said these things since the book came out.
Right.
So, you know, do I believe that they might have said them? Maybe they did. Maybe the context was different. Maybe the wording was slightly different.
Right.
Maybe they didn't say them at all. We don't know. Right. And Woodward doesn't tell us because Bob Woodward wasn't doing journalism here. Chris Hedges did some comments for this on RT, you know, Putin's propaganda network that I often do weekly contribute to as well.
And I occasionally contribute to as well. Yes,
yeah. So
still waiting for my check from Putin, by the way.
Me as well. anyway, so, you know, Chris Hedges, former New York Times journalist until he couldn't take anymore. He said of this, and I agree with him completely, that this isn't journalism.
Right.
This is court gossip.
Right.
This is what happens in every presidential administration. And for partisan purposes, right? And, it's, you know, to be fair, God knows I have enough criticisms of the Trump administration, how Trump as a person had before he took office and so on. We've talked about our complicated feelings about it many times. But I agree with Chris Hedges. This isn't journalism. This is the writing of court gossip to once again make yourself relevant, make your political. Does this change the relations, you know, between the country and Trump? Is this going to lead to, is this some riveting new information? No, this is court gossip.
Right.
That's all it is. It's not worthy of journalism. It is not worthy of the legacy and at times rightly so, the mythological legacy of Bob Woodward.
Right.
And it's really a shame to see this story journalist reduced to something that we would expect now from BuzzFeed or Vox.
Or the National Inquirer. I mean, because you asked the question, is this news?
Or Fox News on the other side, right?
Right.
You know,
but you asked, is this news, okay? And that somebody said this. And actually, we're not talking about somebody said this. Is this news that somebody said that somebody said that somebody said that? And it's not even that. Is this news that somebody wrote about somebody saying somebody said it? That's where we are.
Now,
it's insane.
What is interesting about what Woodward wrote, and that leads us into what I think is the far more important piece, is this Washington Post anonymous op-ed by someone who claims to be a senior official within the White House.
Yeah, it was the New York Times, but yeah.
The New York Times, you're right, the New York Times. Yeah, the New York Times op-ed page claiming that I am...
part of the resistance inside the Trump administration. That's the title.
Yes, part of the administration's inside the Trump administration, right? And this is just amazing. Now, to be fair, when you count what is considered a senior official within the executive branch, you're actually, depending on what tier you're talking, some 640 to 1,920 different people who could possibly deserve that title. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be Pence, sorry, Lodestar theorists, or Ivanka Trump, or Mattis himself, or
whoever.
Something like that. But Bob Woodward's book brings this up, and it's mentioned again in this anonymous piece, that Mattis was swiping documents, abrogating U.S. Free trade agreements with Korea off the president's desk that he had ordered to prevent him from signing them.
You know, now, go ahead, because I want to frame that with
that
something.
That is a coup. That is a soft coup.
They're not even soft.
Ineffective.
Yeah, not even soft. Right. I mean, they just executed it. That's, you know.
Now, we have said this many times that Trump is not in control of his own foreign and military policy.
Right.
That this cabal of generals and others around him, you know, Mattis, Coates, Kelly, the quote adults in the room that we should be thankful are protecting us. You know, and that's fine. I mean, Trump was elected by the American people, not by Putin. Sorry, you know, it just didn't happen that way.
Right.
And either you call into question our democracy, which I do on a routine basis,
me too. Right.
I don't believe in it, you know, or you are perfectly okay with the idea that, you know, the deep state and it's rather hilarious here. The supposed author of this goes on to say, oh, this isn't the deep state.
Right.
You know, this is the steady state.
We're just the guys in charge. We're not the deep state.
Yeah. I'm basically saying, well, this is the deep state. I mean,
right. I know. Yep. Product, you're right. You're right. Right? Yep.
It's absolutely insane. And the fact that this isn't causing a more, you know, if you disagreed with the president's policies and you stood up an argument and you failed to convince him, and the policy went forward, and you believed it was a genuine threat to the country's national security, then your job is to refuse to perform it and to step down.
And if you want, I mean, if you want to bring political pressure, you've got an open mic at any news station on the planet. The whole media will gladly join you in dogging Trump over this.
They would be pushing each other, you know,
out of the way,
off cliffs in order to get to you first to put you on the air.
I'd like to watch that myself, actually. But, you know, let me just interject here one thing, okay? Because the fact, you know, the big kicker for these guys, they said they love most of what Trump's doing. Don't get us wrong, the tax thing, this and that. We love all of that. But foreign policy and trade deals, he's so crazy and can't be deal with and all that. And you mentioned the rumor of Mattis pulling a trade the deal with South Korea off his desk. Well, you know, not for nothing, this guy who's spent the last 50 years in business is probably more qualified than anybody that's ever sat in that White House to negotiate trade deals or any other kind of business deal. Most of these people have never negotiated business deals, and that's all he's ever done.
I'm not necessarily going to agree with that, because running a business and not running it very well, by all accounts of his finances, I'm going to
disagree with that. Having you know, close knowledge in the real estate industry in New York, what looks like not running it well just because it filed bankruptcy doesn't mean that the shareholders didn't make a gazillion dollars ripping off the public or whatever. And if that's your job and you accomplish it, then you did it well. It's a different job than the qualifications for being president. But when you're sitting down negotiating contracts with people on the other side, you know, if he got people to build his hotels and didn't have to pay them, he might be a lousy human being. But the contract with the contractors were negotiated very well from his point of view.
Okay, well, a national trade agreements and a business contract to make money are not the same thing.
I understand. We'll
agree to disagree on that one. I think we agree on that it was not Mattis's anywhere within his purview or the purview of any politician to swipe this off the president's deck in order to stop him from signing.
Well, I will say this much on that point, though, okay? If I'm going to send somebody in on my team to negotiate a trade deal, a real estate closing, or whatever, it's going to be Trump and not the general.
Okay, well, that much I'll agree with you, that it's not Mattis's, it's nowhere within his purview to make a decision on trade.
Right.
At the end of the day, you either, you know, believe that the president has the right, you know, any president has the right to make these decisions, you know, or you stop believing in U.S. democracy.
Take your choice. Right.
You know, and this is again and again what you see. I mean, the other concrete example that this anonymous deep stater who outed himself says in this, that the other thing he mentioned was relations with Russia, that right. Trump didn't want to kick out 60 diplomats in the wake of this totally absurd Skripal affair and allegations without what anyone would consider, right. you know, adequate evidence from the United Kingdom. And that, you know, we needed to respond to Russia. And quite specifically, right. Trump was elected. If there is one campaign position on foreign policy that he consistently had, yep. it was to improve relations with Russia. He was elected to yep. the presidency by a narrow margin, God knows.
Right.
But he was elected, you know, to improve, explicitly to improve relations with Russia.
Yep.
You know, whether that's whether people, why people voted for him or not is regardless. They knew that was his position.
It was then, an unpopular position that cost yes, him votes
it was,
for sure.
It didn't gain right. him any credits with the Republican base, elite, right, with right. the Republican Party. Yep. I don't believe it gave them any bonus with the Republican base. Mm-hmm. I don't think they really, you know, care about relations with Russia other than you know, what their leader tells them they should believe on it. You know, I'm of course not to the people listening to the show, even a few of them on the right or something. I'm talking in general. Right. Americans, by and large, do not vote on foreign policy. They vote on their policy. This is held up by countless you know, surveys, polls, elections, you know, everything that shows this. So it's not simply a Republican thing. That is once again the deep state ensuring they know better that Russia should be our enemy. And they're going to make sure they stay that way. That is, it's just wrong.
Yeah,
it's,
I mean, this
it's
is
unconstitutional.
I want to quote it.
It amounts to a coup.
Yeah, I just want to quote it on that point, that this is like the big sin here. The president was reluctant to expel so many of those diplomats and complained for weeks about senior staff members getting him boxed into further confrontations with Russia. In other words, he complained that the staff was boxing him into confrontation with Russia when he was trying to deconstruct the confrontation regime that had been established.
Which I feel is the whole point of this whole Skripal nonsense right. to begin with, right? Coming, I think the UK has long been wagging the Trump administration dog on Russia.
Yeah.
That is, and this isn't playing around, right? This is continually putting us in situations of significant military tensions in multiple places with Russia that conceivably, not likely, but could conceivably, you know, with misunderstandings, mistakes being made, lead to military and even nuclear confrontation.
Yeah. Well, let's look at one. I mean, because we mentioned at the head end of this, we've got, you know, supposedly he's been boxed into making statements about an indefinite stay in Syria. And Russia's saying, look, we're going in to clean out Idlib now. We know you got a few dozen guys in there. Get them out so they don't get hurt. And if the people who in the deep state who are insistent that the U.S. stay in there and that they take a hard line with the Assad regime and all of the nonsense you're going to hear on television, you know, a couple of U.S. soldiers get killed and Trump doesn't turn around and bomb, you know, how many steps is it to either telling him, look, we're going to kill you or remove you from office unless you respond the way we want, or just pulling him out of office? Now, if I'm Russia and I'm looking at a coup in the United States over this, and they're coming to talk to me about what I need to do next, they got to look at this as a really dangerous situation and maybe have to respond preemptively.
Yeah. I think that segues us right into, you know, a larger discussion of Trump administration in Syria right. and events in Idlib and elsewhere. The Washington Post, as of this morning, Friday morning, comes out with a piece by Karen DeYoung, one of their typical national security reporters that takes their stenography from the intelligence and the military quite seriously.
Right.
evidently the Trump administration has suddenly reversed course on everything they said about getting out of Syria. And now Trump has agreed to an indefinite military effort in Syria, meaning that they have no intention of leaving.
Right. Yeah.
And they specifically say our new policy is not only about ISIS, the final defeat of ISIS, and it has to be said, the only significant presence of ISIS left in Syria is in areas completely surrounded by U.S. territory up against the Iraqi border. And it has been reported by the UN that the U.S. is giving them a, you know, breath,
right.
is giving them time. There have been no significant military actions against ISIS in the United States since last November, since November 2017. So it is obvious that that the U.S. is, either simply allowing them to exist in one or two small pockets, simply to justify their continued illegal invasion and occupation of Syria, or in some cases they may actually be managing them and
right.
using them for attacks
right.
through zones they ostensibly control on Syrian government held territory.
Right. Right.
And none of this actually comes from Trump himself. Interesting.
Right. Which is also important. That's an important point because you keep in mind, there's the virtual show. You've got Nikki Haley at the UN. You've got Pompeo, all these different, and Mattis, all these people talk all these different things. And so far, every time it's been push coming to shove, they're reversed by the president, and the policy that comes out of his mouth is the one that gets followed.
I would actually say it's the other way around, that whatever comes out of his mouth is quickly overruled, whether the documents are swiped off his desk or otherwise.
I'm looking at Korea and you know, the U.S. hasn't really, you know, well, go ahead, make your point, because
this is coming from James Jeffrey, who has been appointed the special envoy to the situation in Syria now, new Syrian czar.
He's Pompeo's boy there, right?
Boy, yeah. And he specifically says that, that we're there not just for ISIS, but we're there to drive Iran out of Syria, as if the U.S. has the right to say who the Syrian government allies with and allows on their territory.
Right.
And they once again bring up this, we're there until we see basically a government that we like take power in Damascus. Meaning, once again, even though they deny it in other words, back to a regime change. He says specifically, U.S. policy is not that Assad must go. Assad has no future, but it's not our job to get rid of him. But we're not going to leave until we see a government that is acceptable to the, quote, international community, unquote.
Right. It's,
So, you know, this is, you got to wonder what Russia, and Iran and China and other countries, that are very involved here. Even Turkey and Saudi Arabia have got to be suffering from whiplash at this point.
And Turkey, especially, Turkey's a very complex player in this all of a sudden,
Yeah, it's multiple, complex players all the way around.
Sure.
So that, I think, brings us, first, Russia has also threatened now, evidently, at least according to several accounts in Business Insider and several other publications, that Russia has threatened the United States in the Al-Tanf base. Now, the U.S. and its proxy forces, the Syrian Democratic Forces, control all of essentially East Syria, everything east of the Euphrates. But they also control one more pocket of significant size in South Syria, right along the Jordanian border, in Syria, in a former Syrian base called Al-Tanf. And at Al-Tanf, the U.S. And Jordan were training fighters and shipping them across the border there. They kind of slow down operations there. There were three times, at least three times, that the U.S. attacked Syrian government, attacked and killed Syrian government forces that it said came too close. They've got a security perimeter they've proclaimed around this occupied area of South Syria. And they have attacked Syrian government forces approaching anywhere near this area at least three times already. Just this week, you know, we saw last week this piece by David Ignatius in the Washington Post where he talked to another anonymous Trump administration official that said the goal of the U.S. was now to create as many quagmires in Syria for Russia and the Syrian government as it could until we get what we want. Well, one of those examples came up clearly in the last week. Russia caught a number of fighters, jihadis, the Lions of the Desert. These are fighters that were formerly evidently affiliated with ISIS. They're now under the U.S. aegis. They were beginning to carry out bombings, attacks in the Palmyra area. That is, you know, kind of like behind lines already, because Palmyra has long been in the area of Syrian government control. They were caught and, they squealed and they said we were trained and armed by the Americans right. at Al-Tanf, where they're preparing a larger force there. Mm. And the Russian government put this out. It was reported all over Russian media and the alternative media. Of course, it didn't make it to the mainstream media at all. They didn't report it. And this week, we've got the word now, supposedly coming from the U.S., that Russia has warned them that if they, you know, that there are militants in Al-Tanf and they will not allow it to be used as a base for jihadist attacks against them, and that they're threatening to attack the base. Man. And the U.S. replies back that we will defend ourselves if attacked.
Yep. Yep.
So this is one of these flashpoints right here. Here, we see the U.S. is training up terrorists for terror, you know, for literal, you know, bombings and stuff behind lines. And Russia is saying that, you know, we can't allow this to happen. You know, this is not even, you know, the quasi legitimacy of a proxy Kurdish government in East Syria. You know, this is just straight up terrorism, using jihadis, and we can't allow it. And these are fighting words being echoed here. Now, I expect the Russian government to back down, at least for the time being here. They've got far right. more important things going on in Idlib, and Idlib is right now the fate of Idlib. I mean, I believe that it's probably already been written, but we've got this Astana framework meeting going on that right as we speak with Putin, Rouhani, the Iranian president, and Erdogan, the Turkish regime leader, in Tehran right now. And ostensibly, this is, you know, the three countries that are really deciding what is going on right. in Syria right now. And this is Russia and Iran representing, you know, the forces allied with the Syrian government. And across the table is Turkey, right. who continues to be the patron and speak for the rebels, the various right. jihadis and Islamists, that are forces that are left in the country. And of course, the area of Turkish occupation adjacent to Idlib.
We're going to have to stop here because we're out of time, but I'd like to pick it up here next week because obviously Turkey has its own security concerns. And Turkey also has been one of the protagonists in the attack on Syria in the first place, and we have to work that some to give people some more context.
I expect the Astana framework to fall apart and yep. the Russian and Syrian government to attack Idlib before we talk again.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much. I'll speak with you again next week. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.